Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Hello, all you curious creatures out there. I'm Amber Ray.
And I'm Andrew McKay, and we are the hosts of Into the Portal.
If you like myths, legends, history with a paranormal twist, join us every week as we explore lesser-known mysteries of our world and beyond.
You can find us on iTunes, Google Play Music, and all other major podcast platforms, and at intotheportal.com, your gateway to the bizarre.
The only question is, do you dare peer into the portal?
Hello, dear listeners of the Mad Scientist Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Cogswell, here with my co-host, Marie Mayhew.
Oh my God, Chris. What is going on?
Marie.
Oh my God. Oh my God,
Chris. I missed you, Marie. I missed you so bad.
I missed you.
Man, well,
you know, you're like jet setting now. You're all taking on the conference circuit and stuff.
Doing too much stuff, Marie.
Mad conference circuit.
Telling you.
I'm just hustling to make a dollar out here, man.
Hustling to make a dollar.
That's Marie Mayhew in a nutshell. Let me tell you, people.
Good stuff. It's good stuff. So, dear listeners, for those that don't know, we have been on kind of a mini hiatus recently, both so that the two of us could take a little bit of time off, but also so that we could do a whole bunch of traveling and stuff that we had to do. Which is why we've been releasing all these episodes that are kind of, you know, with guest co-hosts and things. And yeah, so we're back to regularly scheduled programming here. But this episode.
That you know and love.
But this episode, we thought we could give you a little bit of kind of our on the ground reporting of Alien Con and then Marie's time at the happiest place on Earth.
Just a little side sundry stuff in between.
Yeah, it's going to be great. All right, Jake, roll the tape. So, Marie, tell me about your trip.
Oh my
here.
God,
was it good?
About the trip?
Yeah.
Well, okay, so we went to Joshua Tree, and like
okay.
At Joshua Tree, like. The most research I did, and you guys, our listening base will be really proud of this, is I'm like buried gold treasure at Joshua Tree was my, like everyone else is downloading, here are the animals you'll see. Oh, here's, you know, where you should stop and get out and take a look at the natural environs. I'm like, where's the buried gold treasure, yo? At Joshua Tree. So like we did stop and we did a quick survey of Skull Rock, which was very interesting. That actually does look like a skull. And also the Lost Horse Mines, which is I think from the 1920s, a gold mine that was shut down that still has legend and lore about buried gold in the proximity. So that was our first jaunt. And it was like, I will say it was like a, 700 degrees out. So we really only got out of the car when absolutely necessary, which is what you expect on a good vacation with your family. We're only going to get out to see natural sights for the briefest amount of time before we can get back into air conditioning. And then we went to, being the Star Wars family that we are, we doubled down, maxed out the credit cards, and went to Star Wars Land, Galaxy Edge before the mass population opening. Which I just have to say, if you are a Star Wars fan, you've got to go. You've just got to go. It is like I took pictures and have just been on about it since we've been back. But it really, it's amazing. It's fully an environment where you are just submerged into this entirely different culture, and every detail around you is Star Wars or Star Wars related. And it's pretty cool. Like, I know you're more of a Harry Potter's guy, but like when you turn the corner in this park and you see the Millennium Falcon parked there in full size, you're just like, holy S.
Yeah,
like, that's the Millennium Falcon. That's like, that's the ship, you know, and you're trying to bend your head around it. And it's like, you know, say what you want about Disney and about what they've done with Star Wars and just about the park in general. And there's people out there, they'll be like, it's, you know, Disney is corporate, blah, blah, blah. They do not skimp on any detail. And they are really, really tight and really good with the experience. And for the time that we only got like a four hour window in there. And it was just like, oh my God, this is insane how well they did it. And the best things that we saw that was open while we were there was the Millennium Falcon and seeing it kind of in real and then going on the ride, which you can actually, you know, you have you're either a pilot or a gunner or an engineer on the ride. And it's kind of stressful and kind of fun. And I piloted it and we didn't crash.
Nice.
We hit a few things, but that's cool. And then there's a cantina where they actually serve alcohol, which is hysterical. And it looks like the Star Wars cantina. I mean, it is like just crazy, 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 amazingly detailed. And so we went in there and we had some drinks and had some snacks and put down a couple Benjamins there. But it was like, all in all, it's like, if you are a fan, if you're a fan of the original series, if you've got a family or if you're just like on your own, you've got to check it out. I can't recommend it enough how much fun it was and how much like it takes you kind of out of your everyday, you know, worries and concerns and everything else. So massive two thumbs up and going to be paying that off for quite some time, but it's totally worth it.
Right, right. Oh, that's super cool. You know, it's funny. So we did AlienCon with a couple other podcasters, right? We did it with the guys from Hysteria 51, Stuff They Don't Want You to Know, Somewhere in the Skies, and then Monsters Among Us. And then, of course, Dave from Blurry Photos was also there as our moderator. So we all did this panel together. I'm trying to think. I think that's all the shows that were represented there. I'm pretty certain. And there were a bunch of other podcasters there, too, who also were great and came around and stuff. So we had, you know, from Breakers, from the Sofa King podcast, you know, just a bunch of great folks and stuff coming together and hanging out and everything else. And so it was super fun. And we actually did a day. So we did the thing itself, of course. And then we actually did an after party at what's known as the Scum and Villainy Cantina in Hollywood. And so that cantina is actually modeled after the cantina from like Mos Eisley, right? From Star Wars. And
there
so
we go.
I guess it was actually really funny. It was really funny. So it was started as, I guess, a pop-up after the reboots, but episode 1, 2, and 3 were made.
Yeah.
It was created then as kind of like a touring facility, kind of like a bar. And then people liked it so much, they just turned it into a normal bar. But they added like a bunch of random stuff. So there was like, you know, some Schmeagol stuff from The Hobbit. And there was like, you know, all kinds of cool kind of stuff there.
It's just a pop culture bar. Love
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. So it was a lot of fun, you know, which was really cool. So I had a great time there, really, you know, and, you know, so like I said, it was great.
The listeners that don't know about AlienCon, like what's Alien? I have a picture in my head about what AlienCon is, but what is AlienCon?
Right.
What
did you do? So actually, what'd so first, so first, before I what's it? Before I mess up anything else here, so I just wanted to give a shout out to all the people that were there with us. Right. So we had, of course, on the panel itself was, like I said, you know, Hysteria 51. It was Monsters Among Us, Stuff They Don't Want You to Know, Blurry Photos, Somewhere in the Skies, and then, of course, us, the Mad Scientist Podcast. Then at the events afterwards, we had the Sofa King podcast guys came out, Patty from the Just the Worst podcast, Sam Culper from Breakers podcast, and, you know, just really great guy and everything. So a bunch of really cool shows came out to support us. We also had the folks from Wee Witches 3, which is really cool, which is a show that we played their we played their promo on an episode not so long ago. So they came out too, which was really great to meet them in person. So the general idea here, and then of course, you know, the folks from the What's-Its and the Who's-Its. There were just a whole bunch of people there, you know, which was really great. It was so much damn fun. I had a great time there, really. I cannot say enough about how much fun I had. But okay, so what is AlienCon? So AlienCon essentially is AlienCon is put on by the people that do like the A&E broadcast network. Okay. That's sort of who does it.
Arts and entertainment.
So it was put on by them, and through the History Channel, which is another company that they own. And so it's really, really started off as kind of a promo spot for the Ancient Aliens show. And it's kind of broadened
big
out
up yourself,
now.
Big up yourself, Ancient Aliens.
Yeah. So it's broadened out now to be include a bunch of other people. So for instance, we got to meet with the people from Rogue Planet, who are, you know, big friends of the show. We really enjoy them a lot. Like I said, you know, Ryan from Somewhere in the Skies was there. Another great show. Got to meet all the Ancient Aliens people. That was kind of fun and interesting and something I never thought I'd do. Got to speak to some really cool people and everything. But essentially, it's just kind of a conference for folks who either, you know, are interested in this stuff, who are involved in the world of it in some ways. You know, it's not a serious conference in the sense of, you know, oh, we're going to talk about data and stuff. Like, it is not that at all. It's definitely much more like a Comic-Con kind of thing.
Which is awesome.
Yeah, which is awesome and a lot of fun.
A lot of fun.
Yeah, it was great. So, you know, I had a great time there. So the panel that we were on was for podcasting in the UFO world. And so obviously from the list of people
niche.
That were there,
super niche. That's awesome.
Our panel ran the gamut from people who I think are more skeptical than us here on our show to much less skeptical or I guess skeptical is the wrong word, much less critical. I guess I would say that their show is more about taking in stories and hearing from people, as opposed to kind of dissecting the science or the evidence that's behind the stories themselves.
Interesting.
So that was cool. And then another thing that was a lot of fun actually was the experiencer panels, which there was one in particular that was really good. A lot of it was people who have made a lot of money in the UFO field or a lot of money have made some money in the UFO field coming out and saying, "Hey, buy my book." You know, there was a lot of that going on, but
really,
yeah, which is very surprising, Marie. But
oh my God, what?
But the other
people
the other,
trying to make money?
Ridiculous,
come
right,
on, son?
But the other thing was, or the other part of it that I thought was pretty cool, was the sessions where it was actual people who had experiences themselves coming forward and saying, you know, what happened to them and how it's affected them afterwards. And you know, for anyone who's skeptical of this subject or thinks, you know, wonders, well, why does Chris even waste his time on these stories or things? You know, or even just thinks, why would people believe these stories in the first place? I would suggest going to one of these conferences and just sitting in the back and listening to the stories people tell about their experiences and the ways that it's affected them. You know, there were people, you know, nearly in tears, shaking from anxiety of how nervous it made them. People who, you know, talk about how since their experience, they haven't been able to leave the house really, or, you know, they experience extreme anxiety around certain shapes or certain colors of light or certain times of day while they're driving, you know, people that are really affected by this stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, it's really easy to lose sight of the fact that there are real people at the other side of this story that are being taken advantage of with these things. You know, I mean, I did kind of my own unscientific analysis where I just, the whole time, every time I heard someone tell a story of an experience they had, I made a note of whether or not they mentioned that they had been hypnotized or not. Mm-hmm. And it was about 60-40 of about 60% said that they had been either suggested to go to hypnotism or had sought out hypnotism themselves.
Interesting.
And that's that sucks. That's really unfortunate. Yeah. You know, and so when I was actually at the Experiencer panel, which was run by Ryan Sprague and Jason McClellan, both from Rogue Planet, and you know, when I spoke to when I got up at that session and said, you know, listen, there is you know, the original reason that hypnotism was implemented in these cases was as a means to relieve anxiety, which is what you're all talking about, that you have this extreme anxiety after the fact. And so the first time it was used really was in the Betty and Barney Hill case, or the most famous first time it was used was in the Betty and Barney Hill case.
Yeah, the most documented.
Right, where it was it was done not to get information about what actually happened to them, but as a means of allowing them to confront their anxieties in a safe way for their brains, you know, or for their psyches. And since then, we have found that there are a lot better, safer ways of relieving that anxiety than hypnotism. And so I just said, you know, if, you know, for anyone that's suffering with anxiety, which I myself suffer with, you know, I would suggest seeking out better options than hypnotism. You know, and people took that pretty well, I would say, which I was surprised by and really happy with, honestly.
Which is good. And I think, like, from what I'm hearing, it's almost like any subject that people are impassioned about, there's going to be people that are in it for driving commercial interests, right? And there's going to be people in it that can profit off of those commercial interests. And then there's going to be people that actually have some type of experience that's, you know, if it's genuine, that has affected their lives, and the whole sort of that whole spectrum and gamut in between. And I think it's interesting that one event can sort of encapsulate all of that, right? Because I think it's like from the pictures that I saw that you were sending back, I'm like, oh my God, this is some good stuff coming in. But it's also like, I think that it's good that there's a space that people can have that panel and talk about that and talk about and have a shared experience about their anxiety, no matter what, like no matter what the cause of it is. Like, again, am I a believer in the in this type of thing? I don't really know. But, you know, in sitting in and listening to this, as long as there's sort of that shared experience that they're able to feel like they're not alone, I think that that's important. Right. And that gives them like some, at least some sort of comfort in being able to express that out to other people. You know, and I think you're right. Like, hypnotism is so problematic because it comes with so much other stuff than just solving somebody's, you know, the root cause of somebody's anxiety or what's causing a person discomfort.
Yeah. It's a challenging subject, I would say. Marie,
I applaud you for getting up and doing it.
Thank you, Marie.
Making the and being the Dr. Buzzkiller coming up here.
I know. It was really funny. Afterwards, I texted you, Scott, and Forrest, and I just said, I think what I said was, I just told a room full of experiencers that they needed to seek psychotherapy.
Yes.
In a much kinder way. I mean, you know, really, it's really hard not to feel for these people. And, you know, you believe them. I mean, they had something scary happen to them. I just don't know if it was aliens. So the other really cool part of AlienCon was getting to meet with a bunch of really cool people and say hi to them. So
that's insane.
So I got
the ones that you were reporting back. That's so cool.
Yeah. So we actually had a chance to, just to speak to like David Childress really quickly, just to say hi. You know, he's super nice in person. I don't like we've seen on the show, we don't necessarily agree with everything he says, but he's a very nice guy. He seems super cool. We did get to talk to and actually record a mini little interview with Seth Shostak, who is a PhD who did work for SETI. He actually was, I believe, director of SETI for some time. and hosts some hosts his own podcast and this sort of subject and things, which is really cool. He's a fellow of the Committee for Skeptical Inquiry, was chair of the International Academy of Astronautics, SETI Permanent Committee, and, you know, has just a whole bunch of stuff going on for himself. He's a really cool guy. He was super nice, super kind to even sit down with us. He didn't have a lot of time, but we got to do kind of a mini interview. So we're hoping to have him come on the show for a full episode soon. And also get the audio from him. It was a total noob move, Marie. I asked the PR person that was running the interviews and stuff. I was like, hey, I would really love to talk to him just for 10 minutes, just to even introduce myself, introduce our show, and maybe set up a time to talk later. And so then when he came in, he was like, oh, so where are you set up for recording? And I was like, oh, I actually don't have any stuff because I'm a total scrub. And he's like, oh, I got my own stuff. We can record it on my stuff. And he came.
That's
yeah.
Good.
So I need to email him and get that file from him. But he was so, so kind and cool.
Excuse me, may I please have the audio?
Like, seriously, it was ridiculous, nice. But he was super cool, really nice. And just kind of got to see a lot of the folks you see on Ancient Aliens, which was cool. It was really funny. The amount of money that they must make off of just autographs and things, because no one gives an autograph for free, right, at these things.
Oh, no.
They're all charging. Like, I think
we probably would. Well, of course I'll sign that. Who else wants me to sign something?
Oh, my God. If someone asked me to sign something, I would freak out. I don't even know what I would do.
I don't even know if I'd sign my name, to be honest with you. I think I'd sign the name of somebody vastly more interesting.
I was going to say, I'd be so freaked out. I'd be like, all right, I'm just going to sign this with, I don't know, Kobe Bryant or something, right? Like, just gonna sign it as someone else who's a lot cooler
LeBron
than
LeBron,
right?
King James. There it is. How could that go wrong?
Right. We got to see, I think the thing that was kind of the funniest for me was there was a panel hosted by this guy who is the producer of Ancient Aliens, and he came out, and there was a bunch of people there that are kind of on the MUFON experiencer team, including two people that I really like, actually. So N.K. Kranda and then Earl Grey, who are both doing really good work, actually, in this field. But what was funny is they, you know, the professionalism of those two was sort of drowned out by the oddness of the rest of the team that was up there. So, you know, it quickly veered off into, like, we've been telepathically communicating with aliens for decades, and they tell us not to use nuclear power and, you know, that kind of stuff. And then at one point, this woman got up and said, well, who here has had a psychic connection? Who here feels like they've had a psychic connection that has been turned on in the last couple years? And then she was like, you know, well, who feels like something big is coming, but they can't describe what? And it's like, ma'am, why don't you ask us, you know, who here had breakfast this morning? Like, they're such vague questions, you know?
Well,
like,
it's such a cold read. I mean,
It was really interesting.
Because what if you're the dillweed that's like, I haven't.
Well, that's
anything. The aliens have told me, like, keep on keeping on. It's going to be just normal, boring stuff for the rest of, like, at least another 75 to 150 years. Right. They're like, no major innovations, no great, you know, like, these, you know, anything you're experiencing now, if it seems traumatic, it's just a bump in the road. Going to even out.
Yeah.
Right?
Really funny.
Sorry.
No.
I just feel like, you know, like, especially for aliens who probably experience more long time. If you're an alien being, and if an alien being is out there, I don't think they may experience time in the same ways that we do. So it's sort of like they may be projecting something that's like, if you're actually receiving something from them, first of all, but second of all, like, maybe it's not within the next X years.
Yeah.
Small diatribe. Please continue.
No, it was an interesting little situation that went on there. And then I was going to go to some other panels and things, but then, like, just the, I ended up spending a lot of time in kind of the area where people were selling things. And so I bought a bunch of wacky, books. I got some stuff. Really funny. So actually, this was really interesting. So we had someone, when I went down there, there were people talking about, you know, there was a team there who are supposedly working on anti-gravity technology. And they were wearing lab coats and stuff, which was kind of fun.
Legit.
And Yeah.
Did you see your, did you were like, I instantly trust you, sir.
Well, so.
You are wearing the identification of science.
So I went up and they saw my name tag and they were like, oh, I think we've argued with you on Twitter. And I was like, yeah, probably. That's probably accurate.
You're the a-hole from Twitter.
Yeah,
like,
you know.
I am.
So that,
and I don't even, I don't have my lab coat.
No, so that interaction was kind of fun. And then I went to a table the second day. So I promised Jake that I would buy him a mineral or a crystal or whatever to help him with his aura. And so he was like, well, what kind are available? And I was like, I don't know. I'll get you something funny. And so I went down and, there was actually a really cool table where a local teacher, like I think he said he was a local high school teacher, was selling pieces of meteorites that he collected,
which was actually
really cool. So him and I talked a little bit and, you know, we got on pretty well and we were talking about meteorites and I was telling him how, you know, some of the labs that some of my colleagues who he worked with actually do research on obtaining new phases of solid matter from meteorites, right? So new types of crystals or new types of iron, aluminum components or whatever for magnets. And so that was really cool. That was a really cool interaction. And then I went to another table the next day and I was walking around and they were like, you're a presenter. What did you present on? And I kind of explained my background and, you know, what we were talking about at the panel. And this lady and her two coworkers or booth mates, I guess these two guys, were like, oh, so you're like, you know, crystals and stuff. They're like, oh, so you'll really like this one. This one's been scientifically proven for whatever. And so the original reason I went up to it was because they were cut into these really pretty patterns, like of star pieces almost. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, these are cool. Like, I'll get some for the team. And so I went to go get them and I was like, oh, what is this one called? And they're like, oh, it's Shugnite. And I was like, Shugnite? Like,
as in Shugnite?
Like Marion Hugh Knight Jr. Shugnite? Like the scary rapper / you know, voluntary manslaughter guy? And they were like, oh, no, it's Shungite. And I was like, oh, okay, that makes a little bit more sense. So Shungite, what's actually interesting, and so this is actually kind of cool. So Shungite is actually it's a mineral, obviously. It's a real mineral.
Right.
Technically, it's a mineraloid. But so it's mostly carbon. It's like 98 to 99% carbon. Uh-huh. And so the reason it's called Shungite is originally it was found near Shunga in Karelia, Russia. Okay.
Right.
Okay. So, Shungite, what it actually is it's very dark. It's black in color, but it lusters. It appears to shine almost. Right.
Uh-huh.
And so it's pretty, it's actually really pretty. But so what it was originally used for, or what it's, what's the word? What it's most famous for, I guess, is as a folk treatment for different things. But it actually does, the interesting thing with Shungite is, it actually does have some properties that make it interesting. So, for instance, originally it was used as like spa treatments, right? So it was crushed up and put into water in spas around Russia. So Peter the Great set up the first one in Karelia, which put Shungite into the water and things. And they actually would provide some Shungite, or they were thinking of providing Shungite, I guess I should say, to the Russian army in the 18th century. Specifically for purification of water, because it's just like carbon, the carbon filter in your Brita filter, right? It's the same essential kind of, it's the same idea essentially, right? So it's an interesting, it was like, you know, it was kind of an interesting thing. And I couldn't tell if these people had hit on it. If that's what they were talking about when they said it's got medicinal properties or whatever.
Yeah, it's cool, but it didn't co-form Death Row Records or anything.
No, it did not. It did not, Marie, which is what the real Shugnite did. It would have been a lot cooler if this rock had done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'm just saying, if you're going to be naming, if you were going to go for that type of association, your rock had better, if you're going to come at the king, you best not miss.
So. it was really funny. So anyway, so that was my AlienCon experience. It was pretty fun. I think we're going to get asked to do it again, which is kind of cool. So I don't know.
Those fools.
Little do they know. Yeah, it was really cool. Oh, and that was the other thing. Another really cool panel we saw was by the alien theorizing guys. They recorded a live show at the event, which was really fun and a lot of really cool. I suggest you guys go out and listen to it. Listen to all the shows we mentioned this time. It was really great. So yeah, that was AlienCon, Marie.
Well, the next time we go back, got to merch up, all right? We got to be selling.
Oh, I was handing out stickers like crazy. I can't remember. I can't remember. So I actually got to meet, or I took a picture with Travis Walton, which was really cool. And I think I gave him a sticker, or maybe I was too nervous. I don't know. But as soon as we walked away from him, so I took a picture. It was me, Derek, and Brent. So Brent from Hysteria 51, Derek from Monsters Among Us. So when we walked away, it was really funny. So Brent goes to us. He's like, you know, we might have just touched a guy who was actually in an alien spaceship. And I was like, yeah, that's true. I guess that's kind of true. It's pretty interesting. Well,
so did you get to meet George Knapp?
Yeah, got to shake hands with George Knapp and introduce myself, which was really cool. Mm-hmm. I don't think
did you drill him? Did you ask him any hard hitters?
Did not drill him.
Come on, man.
Well, so there was this room set up, which was like the landing spot for everyone who was speaking at the event. So in that room is where I met and saw most of these kind of people from the show and everything, right? I mean, so you walk in and there's like, you know, Giorgio and Mike Barra and Eric Von Daniken and Childress and whoever eating lunch. You know, the free lunch that was provided or whatever. Nick Pope.
Sweet.
All that stuff.
That's
so
right, free lunch.
There were all these people sitting there. So I walk in and the alien theorist theorizing guys are sitting at a table with George Knapp and someone from To the Stars. And George Knapp is just like, you know, working constantly, it looks like. Just taking notes.
Do you have a security detail?
He didn't. Oh, okay. Well, it was interesting. Okay. So he's writing all these notes and stuff. He's got this big binder of stuff. And the alien theorist theorizing guys are just kind of sitting there like in awe, basically. Like, oh my God, it's freaking George Knapp. And so I went over and introduced myself, and I don't know if he recognized who I was, but it certainly felt like it. You know what I mean?
So from your recent foray into the field of MUFON?
Yeah, or from my attacks on To the Stars and what I think. You know, the media blitz
for
them.
Or from the subsequent other shenanigans that you've been up to.
Sweet. Right. So
any one of those.
Right. So
we're getting you some theme music that we're going to start to play the next time. So you can have your own big binder and then we're going to be like.
I'm telling you.
I'm walking up to him and you're like, boom, I'm that. I'm like, that guy.
Okay, seriously, so though. So it was really interesting. And so when I, So when I talk to him. I just said, you know, hey, George Knapp, you know, big fan of some of the stuff you've done, you know, really enjoy reading it, whatever. And then, And then he was like, oh, yeah. You know, it was like, Chris Cogswell. And I was like, yeah. And then I just kind of left because I was like, oh, my God, he's going to be like, you've been calling me out on Twitter. It's like, so I kind of chickened out, Marie, but
come on, man,
I'm telling you,
thrown down. You could have been like, that's right, Mr. Knapp. I have been throwing you down on Twitter. And here's why.
Right. Well,
then it would have gotten written up. Ooh, that would have been exciting news.
Yeah. He also, though, was pretty clearly like about to go to a session. So I was kind of like, okay. But anyway, so what was interesting, though, is, you know, because honestly, I don't necessarily think George Knapp is in on the To the Stars shenanigans, right? I just think that he's reporting on it because it is interesting and newsworthy. I just don't know if he's being as critical as I would like him to be. You know what I mean? Well,
you know what I would have asked him about, right? You know who I would have asked him about.
Yeah. Immediately. Right. And, you know, that was kind of an interesting thing. Like, if we ever sit down with him, that is the first thing we will ask about. I promise you that, Marie.
So good. Well, first of all, we're never going to sit down with him because the man's probably not dumb.
Probably never.
I mean, someday, maybe he will. I'm not going to rule it out. We're not ruling it out because you never know, right? Stranger things have happened, as seen at AlienCon.
Yeah.
With you in the picture of the baby alien.
Oh yeah, that was a good picture. It was fun stuff. So the other thing that happened on the way to AlienCon, which was kind of interesting, was there are a lot of, and I know listeners, you're probably getting sick of hearing about all the UFO world shenanigans going on right now. There's just a lot of stuff happening really quickly with the History Channel and the show Unidentified and To the Stars and whatever. So this.
Drama.
So not even
we should
this
have
week-
like a play-in for it.
I'm telling you. So not even this
UFO
weekend.
Drama. Bum, bum, bum.
All right, not even necessarily this weekend, but over the past couple of weekends, let's say, a lot of crazy stuff has been going on. So one of them was the release of this what's known as the Core Secrets Memo. Right. So what these are is these were released by we don't know who released them. It was released on It was released on Twitter on June 6th. And around that same time, it was released on on Reddit by this throwaway account who also released another series of memos on the alien autopsy video. Right. And so. OK. So the recent drama in the UFO community, and again, I know, listeners, if you're getting sick of this topic, let us know. We know that there's a lot going on. We like it because it puts you up to date. It's stuff that we're interested in. But again, we're trying to intersperse it here and there. We're not trying to go super overboard with it. But it's a little hard not to when it is the primary news on these subjects that's going on right now.
And we're gonna have a song for it.
We sure are.
Drama.
So we're gonna put up all these documents up on the Twitter, on the website, and things, so people can find them if they want them. So what happened over the last couple weekends is, so first there was a leak of emails going back and forth between people on the between Bigelow, Eric Davis, Colm Kelleher, and Hal Pudoff, and a couple other people. On the alien autopsy film that appears to have been sent out around 2001, around those years, right? So the documents say on them March 23rd, 2001, that they're addendums from these things, right? Now, for those that don't know, the alien autopsy film it's 17 minutes, it's in black and white, and it seems to show, or what it was purported to have said to have shown, was an autopsy of an alien body collected at Roswell. It was originally released in 1995 by Ray Santilli, who claimed that it was an authentic image or an authentic film of an alien body. Right? In 2006, though, he came out and admitted that it was not authentic, but instead was what he called a staged reconstruction. He claimed that it was... essentially, they saw a real video of an autopsy in 1992 and then created a fake of that to try and get the public talking about this footage. So they tried to make a recreation of the real footage they saw and then pass it off as true.
Hmm.
Originally, it was broadcast on the Fox channel, right? Under the name Alien Autopsy Fact or Fiction. Right? So...
And this is the famous alien autopsy video.
This is the famous
really
one.
Only one.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. This is the famous one that everyone's seen. Right?
No worries then. Yep.
Okay. So the film was put out there And so Santilli and his fellow producer Gary Shufield said that it was actually a reconstruction in 2006, like we said, after a comedy version of it was put out in 2006. Well,
there's a comedy version of it.
There sure is. So what they claimed was that it was a restoration, not a fakery necessarily, but that there were a few frames.
An homage.
Well, so they said that there was a few frames of the original film still in there that were real, quote unquote. Okay. So this has been known since 2006. This has been their kind of claim, you know. However, what happened is that a bunch of other people came out and said that, well, we were all involved in this fake as well, right? So John Humphreys came out. He was a sculptor. He came out and said that he was the one that constructed the bodies. A bunch of other people said that they came out and actually were the ones that bought pieces of the meat that was used as the innards of the aliens' body themselves. So they actually bought them at a Smithfield meat market in London. So from the S.E. Crosby Wholesale Butcher Smithfield. They also said Humphreys himself, that sculptor, said that he was the one that played the role of the chief examiner. And that there were a couple of different takes on it. And then afterwards, they disposed of the bodies by chopping up the sculptures and then throwing them away in random trash bins around London.
So you have a lot of people, really quickly, just to interject, you have a lot of people that are substantiating the fact that this was a fraud, that have no financial gain in doing so, maybe necessarily now, right? I mean,
yes,
it's being verified. Like, this seems like you've got enough. Okay, keep going. Just pointing that out.
Right. No, yeah. So
I'm with you.
There's a lot of people who have said, okay, it is fake, right? Yes. So Santilli, what these documents show is that, although basically everyone else takes it as a complete hoax, these other people in the Bob Bigelow circle, including Davis, Colm Kelleher, whoever, as well as and Kit Green, who is part of the Mirage Men story generally, they all say that they believe that it's true because they think it's true.
Why? Why is it true? Why would we choose this to say that it's true? There's so much stuff out there that you could do now if you're going to, like, I don't, okay, keep going, sorry.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? So Kit Green has said that he believes that these things are, this is true, right? There was a real event that took place, whatever, right? This is from one of the emails. So this is from email number 3 from Kit Green to Eric Davis and Hal Pudoff and John Alexander. It says, subject re-autopsy. After reviewing the autopsy film, one, the prosectors were not pathologists. They were one surgeon and one non-surgeon, both physicians. The body was not human. The procedure was non-standard and not even autopsy protocol, but seemed like a legitimate screening attempt. The procedure was not forensic, and many mistakes were made that would be embarrassing today. But assuming the procedure was indeed in 1947 or so, easily explained and forgiven. The body is burned, that is charring, not decomposition. Brain liquefaction had started, but the brain was abnormal in terms of human anatomy. The body looked pretty faked, but I intend to look at the film again on the 27th of January to make it a better decision. Snip from Kit. So here's the thing, right? So even inside of these documents, right, it says, hey, this looks super fake.
But does it look super fake?
Right.
Y'all.
But what they are saying, what they're essentially saying is that although this film looks fake, all their secret contacts in the government came out and said that it was actually real or that it was based on something real. But the problem with all of that, right? So this is here, right? So in January 2001, appendix email number 3, and then this month, appendix email number 2 and number 1, Kit provided his professional evaluation of the Santilli alien autopsy film /video. The summary of Kit's evaluation is, the alien autopsy film video is real, the alien cadaver is real, and the cadaver seen in the film video is the same as the photos Kit saw at the Pentagon during a briefing.
Kidd said that the alien forensic tissues could hypothetically be located at Walter Reed Armed Air Force's Institute for Pathology Medical Museum, which is not open to the public and requires a security clearance to get in. Kidd only visited there twice in his career. Kidd made his visits under escort by the chief medical examiner of the Army, Dr. Charles Stahl. Kidd stated that the Army physicians did the procedure seen in the film video, and they conducted a non-forensic, non-standard autopsy screening procedure. They made some mistakes. The alien is not human. Its brain lacked the gross anatomical structure seen in human brains, and liquefaction of the brain due to decomposition can be seen in the video, whatever. There was no in-depth molecular or cellular biological investigation produced on the alien body tissue samples at the time. And then Kidd stated that the justification made by the Special Access Program groups for the 54-year secrecy surrounding the Roswell alien bodies and artifacts is a result of three things. One, bureaucratic secrecy. Two, intellectual and political arrogance among top government officials and scientific geniuses that are involved in this. And three, it was the right thing to do. So, again,
so cool.
Here's the problem with all this, right? So, the claim that they want to be able to make here is that there was a real autopsy film that
right.
was then, but also that part, so that parts of the film are real, but then saying, no, the whole thing is real, but then later saying, no, well, only one frame is real. They just keep moving the goalposts, which is really frustrating. And
why do this now? Why drop this now? Like, that's the other thing. It's like, I don't get why, like, this was on Fox. It's a fraud. Like,
We're going to get into it, Marie. We're going to get into it, Marie.
I'm sorry. I'm just unpacking it because it's just like.
Yeah. It's weird.
Why?
It's real weird. It's real weird, right?
It's stupid.
So,
sorry.
The other thing about this to remember is that actual pathologists viewed the video and came away with thinking that this was super duper fake, right? Even Kit Green in his analysis says this looks super fake. Like, so I mean, so okay, it looks super fake, but they assume that it's real. But like, it's all the evidence is screaming to them this is fake, and yet they still believe it because they're believers, right? So the pathologists that did look at this at the time were Ed Utman in 95, who said that it looked it lacked technical verisimilitude, so it lacked similarity to what a technical actual forensic analysis of a body would look like. Cyril Wecht, who was the president of the National Association of Forensic Pathologists, said that it looked like supermarket meat scraps and could not be related to any abdominal context as far as he could tell. And then Dominic DeMeo said, quote, I would say it's a lot of bull, end quote.
Seems relatively conclusive. I mean, yeah. Again, then, like if you have people that do this for a living that are esteemed in their positions doing for a living, but have no reason to say anything but the truth.
Well, so
why would you?
Okay. One of the funny things that happened. So last night I was on a radio show where I argued pretty heavily that this thing is obviously fake and we should ignore it. We should ignore these notes. So one of the reasons that I was told that Cyril Wecht couldn't be believed was because he was part of the JFK assassination cover up.
Where do you even start with that?
I don't understand.
You can't argue with that.
No.
Like, again, if we're going to talk about conspiracy and the conspiracy mindset, you can't breach the loop with a logic-based argument,
so
in my opinion.
The next document to be released by the same person were notes from Eric Davis. So again, Eric Davis is a physicist who works with Hal Pudoff, so they are deeply within the Bigelow circle. They're both on the NIDS team, as far as we can discern. They are both still working with, well, we don't know if Davis is working with To the Stars, but it seems unlikely that he wouldn't be, considering his close affiliation throughout his career with Pudoff. But and Pudoff is part of To the Stars. So anyways, these Eric Davis notes were then released, which are his contemporaneous notes, supposedly, from 2002, with meetings that he had with one Admiral Wilson, and then another meeting that he had with this guy's name here, Will Miller, who was also supposedly in the Army itself. Now, what these documents show, so first off, again, we cannot overstate this enough. They are the notes of someone who we know believes in the UFO topic, saying that he talked with his admiral, and this admiral told him all this super cool secret alien stuff that he can't talk about anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it's again, we keep making this analogy. It's like the kid in middle school who, you know, said, well, look, this is the note that my girlfriend wrote me, but she goes to another high school and you can't meet her.
She's in Canada.
Exactly. You know, she's a supermodel in Canada. So these, mm-hmm. you know, really, mm-hmm. Even if these notes are real and these meetings took place, who cares? Because we can't verify any of the contents of the notes. There's no way to verify them, right? The other thing that's interesting with this are some of the things that are said, right? So, for instance, in this one from Will Miller, he says, quote, now all that said and pending further discussion with you and Hal on your ultimate objectives for having such information, I could provide the following. One, particulars on a special team involved with recovering crashed craft. Two, the name and last location of a senior officer who I believe had firsthand knowledge U.S. government alien reproduction vehicles at Area 51 and associated locations. Three, and that typo is in there. It's not me just misreading something. Three, the name and current location of a retired senior officer who I believe was directly involved in government interaction with a significant UFO event on the East Coast. And then four, a list of civilian government contractors who, by virtue of their past and currently highly classified work, current capabilities, clearances, specialized personnel, and geographic areas of concern, most likely have current involvement in and knowledge of U.S. government work in alien-derived technologies, crashes, landing, and associated events. So, that document, mm-hmm. again, comes out, and it is interesting that this letter would have gone back and forth between these two people. But again, to me, all that this reads like is one alien-believing guy sending crazy theories to another alien-believing guy. Do you know what I mean? I think a lot of this comes down to people in the UFO community especially wanting to think that they're very kind of, you know, anti-establishment and whatever, but actually the minute a government official says anything, they believe it 100%. You know? This guy, the only reason we think this document is important is because this guy was in the Navy. That's the only reason why we think this is an important document. Otherwise, this would just be any number of letters that are sent between UFO believers.
If you're going to hang your hat on this alien autopsy video footage, I just think the whole thing is downhill, right? There's just no, you're arguing your way out of a hole to begin with.
Yeah.
And I don't understand if you would like to see full disclosure of whatever is happening out there that you believe is happening, why you wouldn't try and look for more recent events that could be substantiated in a more, I hate to say public culture kind of way, but like that could be substantiated by people that are not just critics and cynics, but sort of the New York Times. Like the New York Times, with that article, you know, X amount of years ago, that was a pretty significant, impressive. What happened afterwards is, you know, up for debate. But like that to me, it's like that's the kind of stuff that you should be pushing for, because the alien autopsy has too much baggage. Mm-hmm. Whether you believe it or you don't believe it, or it's faked, it's not faked, it has a portion of real, not a portion of it's real. You're just down the rabbit hole on the get-go. Any credence or any kind of, I don't know, any kind of like traction isn't going to come from something that's already been looked at. Or people, I would even argue people that have already been ensconced in and wrapped up in what's gone back and forth in the alien community for the last 90 plus years.
Yeah.
I just threw 90 out there. But I mean, that's the thing, is it's like you've got too much one way or the other on it. And it's like, again, as soon as somebody can make the argument like, well, they're a government shill. They're like, they're CIA, or we believe them too much because they're this or that. It's sort of like, how can you even, you know what I mean? It's like, you gotta come up with something else.
Yeah.
And that's what I think is hard, that that certain groups don't want to hear about this, because it's like, I don't want to disprove them just on the sake of who they are and what they've stood for in the past. But at the same time, it's like, dude, alien autopsy is just, you can't, that's just, come on, man.
Yeah. Well, it makes it really hard to take anything else they say seriously. Mm-hmm. When again, mm-hmm. they admitted that it is a fake, right? I mean, even if, you know, it's yes. like, it's like saying, you know, your teacher catches you, you know, I don't know. Your teacher catches you plagiarizing an essay, and you're like, mm-hmm. oh, but I only plagiarized like 98% of it, though. One or two sentences is real. Well, who cares, right? The whole thing is garbage now. You can't do it. And so the argument to me is ultimately, how do you get the public to believe things?
Yes.
You know, it doesn't, like the old adage in the science community is you publish or perish, you know, and mm-hmm. the idea there is that if your work, you know, if you cure cancer and it just stays in your lab forever because no one can believe the things you say, then you might as well not have cured cancer. You know, exactly. who cares? It's the same thing yeah. with this stuff. If this guy really had a couple of frames of a real alien body being dissected, that is worth that in itself would be very important, but it's not important if you put it out there in a way that makes it completely unbelievable, because it might as well have never happened.
Well, and why start with an alien autopsy, right? Like, why start with like something that huge?
Yeah, how
that's going to be that hard for America, the world, whoever you're trying to convince that this is a real thing to wrap their head around. Why not start with something that is like, that's actually legitimate footage that wasn't faked, that was seen by multiple people or something like that? I don't understand. Like, you rush, you go straight towards the end of the argument, which is, here's an alien autopsy. They've been hiding it from us. They've been covering it up. It's like, there's just no, that's too many credibility leaps for any one person to make.
No, it's too much.
Isn't already vested in like believing in every other conspiracy, right?
Exactly.
And if your audience is already the conspiracy mindset, then you've got them already. You had them at the word alien autopsy. But if your audience is somebody like me or somebody else who's highly cynical about whatever else is out there about this, then why don't you put forward something very credible that could be easily believed? That but again, you can't have the conspiracy mindset, but then it's the New York Times. The New York Times is a shill for da-ba-ba-da-da, and then you're down the rabbit hole, right? Like, you have to separate the two things. And I think that that's one of the problems that still plagues, you know, any sort of discovery, is it's tied to too much conspiracy.
Right. So, and what's interesting is, I think the ultimate question you asked, which I think is the logical question here, is why now, right? Why release this stuff now? Yes. I actually think that the reason is very simple. I think it's money. I think that what's happening is the UFO community has seen suddenly that these people attached to Bigelow are being taken very seriously. Mm-hmm. At least as seriously as you can hope to be taken with these topics by appearing on the History Channel, by getting coverage in the New York Times, right? I mean, I think to say that that is a monumental shift for most of these people who are, you know, manning their own booths at AlienCon it can't be understated how important it is to have this kind of real effective media coverage, you know, to finally be taken, you know, even if, you know, whatever, Jeannie, what's her name on CNN? Jeannie, whatever, that's on Erin Burnett.
Oh, yeah.
Even if she's making, you know, the X-Files theme whistle and whatever, it's still at least getting talked about. I think that a lot of people are now coming out of the woodwork and saying, hey, if I want to be taken seriously too, I need to attach myself to this group somehow. And so I'm going to leak documents that show that this group who is being taken seriously took what I put out seriously back then too. And so it starts to drum up interest, right? I think it's the same thing that's happening with Bob Lazar is, hey, you know, Bigelow thought I was legit too at some point, regardless of the fact that Bigelow refused to work with him afterwards or whatever happened there. You know, I think it's why these stories are being recycled now, is because everyone wants a piece of the credibility pie. But the problem is that the more and more of these crazy stories that come out, the less and less pie there is to go around because the, you know, it's slowly disintegrating.
Yes.
It's, you know, what's it? It's like, I don't know, not to get too crass with this or whatever, you know, but it's like, your dinner date is going well with a new potential partner or whatever. And then you go to the bathroom and you come out totally nude. You know, it's like, we're moving too quickly here. You know, we haven't even gotten past the main course, you know, and you're already nude and ready for this to move forward. It's like, you know, it's just,
I would agree.
It's too quick.
I think that's a very funny analogy. And I think that's actually a relatively good one.
Thank you. Thank you, Marie. Yeah, anyways, and I'm not speaking from personal experience there either, of necessarily, but
what?
You know,
now
I'm just going to say only a few frames of that film are also real. So anyways, all right, Marie, let's dig into our next topic.
Thank you again, dear listeners, for listening to the Mad Scientist Podcast. I have been your host, Chris Cogswell, joined by my co-host,
Marie Mayhew.
If you'd like to contact the show, please send us an email at themadscientistpodcast@gmail.com. That's all one word. You can also follow us on Twitter at madscientistpod or at teamgiantsquid for Marie. And of course, you can see us on Facebook, on Instagram, and all over the internet as the Mad Scientist Podcast. And again, our logo is the one with the pumpkin head, so it's easy to see.
Mm-hmm.
If you've enjoyed the show tonight, please consider supporting us on Patreon, where the money that you give to us will help us to promote this show further, to make it better, and just to spend more time making it.
Because we love doing that.
We do love doing that. Our logo was designed by Carrie Shaheen. Our web design is done by Desdemona Howard.
Woohoo!
And our sound design is done by Jake Cardinal. Thanks again for listening.
Thank you. This has been a Dammit Chippy production.
I'm Ken Harbaugh, host of Warriors in Their Own Words, a podcast that presents the unvarnished, unsanitized truth of what we have asked of those who defend this nation. As a country, we need these stories more than ever. Stories from Americans who have borne the battle, including 30-year-old remastered interviews with veterans from World War I recounting their time in the trenches of Europe, and with veterans from World War II, Korea, Vietnam, and from our most recent conflicts in Iraq, Afghanistan, and other battlefields Americans may never have heard of. Hear their stories by listening to Warriors in Their Own Words wherever you find podcasts.